Chapter 20.
There's some kind of awful, enduring myth that after the end of the world, people will turn on one another, that people will become hateful and selfish. That's just not true. It's never been true. The Wasteland Lie, a 2031 essay by Tony Kuei. We work long into the night, breaking into buildings for fire extinguishers, doing headcounts, soothing burns, and pulling broken glass out of wounds. I help Lila, Sadaf, and Sarmat sterilizing needles with a lighter for stitches. The cool night air is the one thing keeping me from vomiting again. My blisters ache, but I have better things to do than nurse them.
"Are you all right?"
Sadaf asks me, her pale pink dress splayed out in the ashes while Sarmat helps her last patient stand. Lila measures out a length of bandage. In the moonlight, with her rescued medical kit and bloody hands, Sadaf looks more like an angel than any angel ever has.
"I'm fine,"
I say, which I've been lying about all night. "Do you want a looking over?"
"No."
A wave of sick clenches my throat, and I press my tongue to the roof of my mouth to keep from heaving. I choke out,
"I'm good."
"If you say so. Also, tell Aisha to take a break, please. If you see her, I'm worried." She nervously picks crusted bodily fluids out from under her nails. "You need some rest too. My professional medical opinion is for you to get some shut-eye." She's right. I can at least try to sleep this off. The inside of the bank sprawls with rough carpet, dusty mahogany desks, and gold accents. Micah sleeps behind a fake plant. A girl named Zara cuddles a blanket as she waits for her girlfriend. I hop the front desk, taking a moment to steady myself once I'm on the other side, and open the door to the hall of offices. Erin is there, in a little nook under the window. Finding her alone in the dark just isn't right. She's hunched, hidden in the folds of a charred shawl, braids falling around her face. In middle school, I'd carry hair ties for girls who needed them, and even now, I reach for them around my wrist.
"Hey,"
I whisper, quietly so as not to scare her. Her head jerks up.
"Fuck,"
she says. I'm not sure what's more shocking, the broken look in her eyes or the fact she just said fuck.
"Sorry." "Hey, Benji."
A tear slips out from the corner of her eye. I sit on the floor beside her, our knees touching.
"Sorry,"
she says again. "I should be out there helping, but here I am." "I'm just glad you're in one piece," I say, tapping my fingers against my thigh to keep the sick down. I hate that one piece is all we can hope for these days. "You need anything?" "I sound like such a child," she says. "A hug? Nick isn't great at them, no offense, but..." I brace myself, and Erin just falls against my chest. She's so small. She has such a big personality and a few inches on me, but God, she's so soft and frail. She's shaking with fear, adrenaline, and exhaustion, like we all are.
"Thank you,"
she whispers. "No. No, I should be the one saying that. I should be thanking her, Nick, and the Alk for this, and the bobby pins, and the hands holding me upright, and the people I saved and who saved me. Those are the things I would burn down the angels for. It's the least I could do, considering what I've brought down on them. I wonder where Nick is right now. What I could say to him now. If I could find the words to apologize to him after all this." Erin pulls back just enough that our temples knock together. Her hands rest on my arms, where I rolled up my sleeves against the heat, showing the ashes and angry red marks that weren't there earlier. marks that the fire could have put there, but I know they didn't.
Does it hurt? She asks.
I shake my head. She doesn't need to worry about me. I shut myself in a copy room at the back of the hall. There's still smoke on the air, seeping in through cracks, windows, and doors. I lie on the floor and stare at the ugly tile ceiling. In the silence, there's nothing to focus on but my burned skin and nausea. Before I fall asleep, I think I see feathers on the edge of my vision. I think I see something strange. Eventually, the door opens. I don't know when. The sound drags me out from sleep, and I look, just a little bit, thinking maybe it's Aaron coming in to check on me or more feathers lurking in the shadows. Nick stands in the doorway. He peers in for a moment, awkward and stiff, and leaves. Those red marks climb up my arms, skin dying in rivers along what used to be veins. They make the heat blisters stand out on my hands, looking like something trying to erupt. Seraph pushing out. The flood pushing out. Hungry. Later. The door opens. The door closes. My eyes open just a crack. Nick stands in the room, unsure, doing that tapping motion again. Tip-tip, tip-tip. Over and over, until it's not enough, and he violently shakes out his hands. He tips forward a little bit, back a little bit, forward, back, and soon his expression doesn't look as pained. Still hurting, but not unbearable. Another shake of his hands. A breath with eyes squeezed shut. I say nothing, not just because I'm pretending to be asleep, but because I know this is something private. He's gone to such lengths to hide the side of himself, the side that flaps his hands and rocks until he's together again, that admitting I'm a witness to it feels wrong. But I do make sure he's in one piece. That's all we can ask for. He is, eventually. His breathing evens. He pushes his hair out of his eyes and primly fixes his bobby pins. He stands with his feet firmly on the floor. He crouches beside me. I fight to keep myself still as possible. His breath gently huffs behind his mask. His shoe scrapes on the carpet as he keeps his balance. He smells like smoke and sweat. Nick's fingers hover, for a moment, over my arm, over my cheek, over my hair. Shit, he whispers. Shit. He gets up and goes to the door but stops, reaching for the doorknob, but unable to grab it, and he turns away like he can't consider the idea any longer. He takes off his jacket and his shirt. The pale expanse of his chest is cut through with awful scars. He's not as muscular as I thought he would be, but there's power in the way his arms move. He turns his shirt over, inspects it. There's a scar on his shoulder and a few on his collarbone, one on his soft stomach, shiny and white. He pats his pockets, then digs in them. What? What are we? Am I still mad at him? He apologized, and I guess I accept it. I need to apologize to him, too. I want to get past this. I don't want to worry about this anymore. I want to sit down, talk about it, and move on. I'm sick of worrying about where I stand with the boys in my life. I have the apology in my pocket, and right now, Nick is with me. Nick, seeming to accept that whatever he's looking for isn't in his pocket, turns to shake it out of his jacket. With the faint moonlight coming in through the narrow window, I can make out the mass of scars on his back. There are so many. It makes my stomach turn. They're dark, all the way from his shoulders to his waist.
A pattern.
A pattern I know. Those aren't scars at all. They're tattooed wings.
What the fuck?
That doesn't make sense. That can't be right. No, I'm seeing it wrong. That has to be it. The shadows are playing tricks on me. I'm seeing feathers where they aren't supposed to be. I saw them before I fell asleep. It's Seraph messing with me. That must be it.
But he shifts in the light, and they're still there. They're carved into his back, scoring all the way down like acid poured across his skin, like a monster tore him apart with its claws.
Nick was a Death Squad soldier. Nick was an angel.
A knife falls out of his jacket and hits the carpeted floor with a muffled thump. His shoulders go with it, sagging like he's suddenly carrying an unbearable weight. He sinks to the floor, absolutely unreadable behind his mask, and he starts to cut his shirt into strips. His arm strains when he yanks at the fabric. I stare at the muscles there, at the edges of feathers creeping onto his sides. There are so many little scars and lines down his sides, right where they would be if he'd tried to claw them off with his fingernails.
Breathe. He told me to keep Judgment Day out of my mouth before I'd even said it. He'd had to figure out his own rules too.
Breathe. He didn't cry when Trevor died. He didn't cry at the funeral.
Breathe.
He moves and leads like a trained soldier, and he tried to tear the tattoos out of his skin with his bare hands.
Oh God. And I told him he was just as bad as Mom.
Nick rips the last strip off his shirt and works my arm out from under my head. I let myself go limp and close my eyes all the way so I don't have to pretend. He ran from the angels. He made it. He got away from the angels, found a home, and survived. He wraps the bandages tight around one arm, then the other, to cover the rotting pieces, blisters, and burns, and he slips in bobby pins to keep it all in place. Nick did it. He did exactly what I've always dreamed of, the thing Dad died trying to do for me. I keep my eyes shut as he moves to the other side of the room. I tell myself I'll look when he leaves, but he never does. When it's been quiet for long enough, I peek and find him asleep against the door. I lie awake, measuring the air in my lungs. The bandages are warm against my already hot skin. They smell like him, like smoke. He knows what I've been through. He understands. I press my face into my arm, right where the bandages wind into the crook of my elbow. He called me a monster, and I called him one back. He suffered as an angel, and I led them to his home to burn everything to the ground. Lord, we can't keep going like this.